Polly found Lieutenant Blau sitting with his back to the cliff, eating scubbo out of a bowl. Igorina was packing away her medical kit, and Blau's ear was bandaged. "Everything all right, sir?" she said. "Sorry I wasn't. I quite understand, Perks. You must stand your turn like the other lads," said Blau's, and Polly heard the quotes clank into place. "I had a refreshing nap, and the bleeding, and indeed the shaking, has quite stopped. However, I do still need a shave."
You want me to shave you?" said Polly, her heart sinking.
"I must set an example, Perks, but I have to say you lads make such an effort it puts me to shame. You all seem to have faces as smooth as a baby's bottom, I must say."
"Yes, sir."
Polly pulled out the shaving gear and walked over to the fire, where the kettle was permanently boiling. Most of the squad was dozing, but Maledict was sitting cross-legged by the fire doing something to his hat.
"Heard about the prisoner last night," he said without looking up. "I don't think the LT is going to last very long. What do you think?"
"The who?"
"The lieutenant. From what I hear, Blouse is probably going to have a nasty accident. Jackram thinks he's dangerous."
"He's learning, just like us."
"Yes, but the LT is supposed to know what to do. What do you think he does?"
"Jackram's stuck too," said Polly, chopping up the kettle with cold water. "I think we just keep going."
"If there's anything there to get to," said Maledict. He held up the shako. "What do you think?"
The words "born to die" had been chalked on the side of the hat, next to the packet of cigarettes.
"Very individual," said Polly. "Why do you smoke? It's not very vampire, really."
"Well, I'm not supposed to be very vampire," said Maledict, lighting up with the shaking hands. "It's the sucking. I need it. I'm on edge. I'm getting the no-coffee jitters. I'm not good with woods in any case."
"But you're a vamp—"
Yet. If this was crypts, no problem. But I keep thinking I'm surrounded by lots of pointy stakes. Truth is, I'm beginning to hurt. It's like going cold bat all over again. I'm getting the voices and the sweats."
"Shh," said Polly, as Shufti grunted in her sleep. "You can't be," she hissed. "You said you've been going straight for 2 years.
"Oh, blood, said Maledict. "Who said anything about blood? I'm talking about coffee, damn it."
"We've got plenty of tea," Polly began.
"You don't understand. This is about craving. You never stop craving. You just switch it to something that doesn't cause people to turn you into a short kebab. I need coffee."
"Why me?" Polly thought. "Do I have this little sign on me saying, 'Tell me your troubles'?" "I'll see what I can do," she said, and hastily filled the shaving mug.
Polly hurried back with the water, ushered Blouse to a rock, and stirred up some foam. She sharpened the razor, taking as long as she dared. When he coughed impatiently, she took a position, raised the razor, and prayed. But not to Nuggan, never to Nuggan since her mother died. And then Lofty was running across the ground, trying to shout a whisper.
"Movement!"
Blouse nearly lost another earlobe. Out from nowhere came Jackram, boots on but suspenders dangling. He grabbed Lofty by the shoulder and swung her around.
"Where?" he demanded.
"There's a track down there. Troopers! Carts! What do we do, Sarge?"
"We keep the noise down," muttered Jackram. "Are they heading up here?"
"No, they went right past, Sarge."
Jackram turned and gave the rest of the squad a satisfied look.
"Okay. Corporal, take Carbrandom and Perks and go and take a look. The rest of you, tool up and try to be brave, eh, Lieutenant?"
Blouse bemusedly dabbed foam off his face.
"What? Oh, yes. See to it, Sergeant."
20 seconds later, Polly was running after Maledict, down the slope. Here and there, the bottom of a valley could be seen through the trees, and as she glanced down, she saw sunlight flash off something metal. At least the trees had coated the woodland floor with a thick layer of needles, and, contrary to popular opinion, most woods aren't littered with branches that snap loudly. They reached the edge of the woods where bushes fought one another for their place in the sun and found a spot with a view. There were only 4 troopers in an unfamiliar uniform, riding in pairs ahead and behind a cart. It was small and had a canvas cover.
"What's in a little cart that 4 men have to protect?" said Maledict. "It must be valuable."
Polly pointed to the huge flag that hung limply from a pole on the wagon.
"I think it's a newspaper man," she said. "It's the same cart, same flag too."
"Then it's a good thing they've gone right past," hissed Maledict. "Let's just see them out of sight and creep away like good little mice, okay?"
The party was travelling at the speed of the cart, and at this point the two riders in the lead stopped and turned in their saddles, waiting for it to catch up. Then one of them pointed back, past the hidden watchers. There was a shout, too far away to be understood. The troopers in the rear trotted up to the cart, met with their comrades, and all four turned to look up. There was some discussion, and two riders trotted back along the road.
"Oh, darn," said Polly. "What have they spotted?"
The horsemen went past their hiding place. A few moments later, they heard the horses enter the woods.
"Do we run and get them?" said Jade.
"Let Jackram do that," said Maledict.
"But if he does, and the men don't come back," Polly began.
"When they don't come back," Maledict corrected her.
"Then those other two will get suspicious, won't they? One will probably stay here, the other will go to get help."
"Then we'll sneak up and wait," said Maledict. "Look, they've dismounted. The cart's pulled in, too. If they look as though they're worried, we'll move in."
"And do what, exactly?" said Polly.
"Threaten to shoot them," said Maledict firmly.
"And if they don't believe us?"
"Then we'll threaten to shoot them in a much louder voice," said Maledict. "Happy? And I hope to hell they've got some coffee."
There are three things a soldier wants to do when there's a respite on the road. One involves lighting a cigarette, one involves lighting a fire, and the other one involves no flames at all, but does generally require a tree. Actually, a tree is not technically required, but seems to be insisted upon for reasons of style. The two troopers had a fire going and a billy can steaming when a young man jumped down from the cart, stretched his arms, looked around, yawned, and sauntered a little way into the forest. He found a convenient tree and, a moment later, was apparently examining the bark at eye height with studied enthusiasm. The tip of a steel crossbow bolt pressed against the back of his neck, and a voice said, "Raise your hands and turn around slowly."
"What? Right now?"
All right, no. You can finish what you're doing."
"Actually, I think that's going to be quite impossible. Let me just, right, okay."
The man raised his hands again.
"You realise I just have to shout?"
"So," said Polly, "I just have to pull this trigger. Shall we have a race?" The man turned around.
"See?"
said Polly, stepping back. "It's him again, the word, the writer man."
"You're them," he said.
"Them who?"
said Jade.
"Oh, dear," said Maledict.
"Look, I'd give anything to talk to you," said de Word.
"Please?"
"You're with the enemy," hissed Polly.
"What?
Them? No. They're from Lord Rust's regiment, from Ankh-Morpork. They've been sent to protect us."
"Troops to protect you in Borogravia?" said Maledict. "Who from?"
"You mean from whom?
Well, you, in theory."
Jade leaned down.
"Efficient, aren't they?"
"Look, I must talk to you," said the man urgently. "This is astounding. Everyone's looking for you. Did you kill that old couple in the woods?"
Birds sang. Far off there was the call of the female blue-capped woodpecker.
"A patrol found the fresh graves," said de Word.
High above, an ice heron, a winter migrant from the hub, gave an ugly honk as it searched for lakes.
"I take it you didn't, then?" said de Word.
"We buried them," said Maledict coldly. "We don't know who killed them."
"We did take some vegetables," said Polly. She remembered laughing about it.
Admittedly, it was only because it was that or start crying, but even so.
"You've been living off the land."
He tugged a notebook out of his pocket and was scribbling in it with a pencil.
"We don't have to talk to you," said Maledict.
"No, no, you must. There's so much you need to know. You're in the ups and downs, right?"
"Ins and outs," said Polly.
"And you," the man began.
"I've had enough of this,"
said Maledict, and marched away from the tree and into the clearing. The two cavalrymen looked up from their fire, and there was a moment of immobility before one reached for his sword. Maledict swung the bow quickly from one to the other, its point hypnotising them like a swinging watch.
"I've only got one shot, but there's two of you," he said. "Who shall I shoot? You choose. Now listen very carefully. Where's your coffee? You've got coffee, haven't you? Come on, everyone's got coffee. Spill the beans."
They stared at the crossbow and slowly shook their heads.
"What about you, writer man?" snarled Maledict. "Where are you hiding the coffee?"
"We only have cocoa," said the writer, raising his hands quickly as Maledict turned on him. "You're welcome to..."
Maledict dropped his crossbow, which fired straight up into the air, and failed to hit anything, especially a duck. This is so unusual in situations like this that it should be reported under new humour regulations. If it had hit a duck, which quacked and then landed on somebody's head, this would of course been very droll, and would certainly have been reported. Instead, it drifted in the breeze a little and landed in an oak tree some 30 feet away, where it missed a squirrel. Maledict sat down with his head in his hands. "We're all gonna die," he said. The troopers shifted as though to stand up, and Jade raised her sapling.
"Don't even think about it," she said.
Polly turned to the writer man. "You want us to talk to you, sir? Then you talk to us. Is this about Prince Heinrich's socks?" Maledict stood up in one mad movement. "I say we grease the lot of them and go home," he said to no one in particular. "One, two, three, what are we fighting for?"
"Socks," said the writer, looking nervously at the vampire. "What have socks got to do with it?"
"I just gave you an order, Polly," said Maledict.
"What is it you think we don't know?" Polly insisted, glaring at De Word.
"Well, to start with, you're just about all that's left of the ins and outs."
"That's not true."
"Oh, there's prisoners and wounded, I think. But why should I lie to you?"
"Why did he call you Polly?"
"Because I know a lot about birds," said Polly, mentally cursing.
"How do you know what's been happening to the regiment?"
"Because it's my job to know things," said the man.
"What's that bird up there?"
Polly glanced up.
"I don't have time for stupid games," she said.
"And that's a..."
She stopped. Something was wheeling high above in the forbidden blue.
"You don't know?" said De Word.
"Yes, of course I know," said Polly irritably. "It's a white-necked buzzard. But I thought they never came this far into the mountains. I only ever saw one in a book." She raised her bow again and tried to take control. "Am I right, Mr. It's My Job to Know Things?"
De Word raised his hands again and gave her a sickly smile.
"Probably," he said. "I live in a city. I know sparrows from starlings. After that, everything's a duck as far as I'm concerned."
Polly glared at him.
"Look, please," said the man. "You need to listen to me. You need to know things before it's too late."
Polly lowered the bow.
"If you want to talk to us, wait here," she said. "Corporal, we are leaving. Carborundum, pick up those troopers."
"Hold it," said Maledict. "Who's the corporal in this squad?"
"You are," said Polly. "And you're drooling and swaying, and your eyes look weird. So what was your point, please?"
Maledict considered this. Polly was tired and frightened, and somewhere inside this was all being transmuted into anger. Hers was not an expression you wanted to see at the far end of a crossbow. An arrow couldn't kill a vampire, but that didn't mean it didn't hurt.
"You're right," he said. "Carborundum, pick up those troopers. We are leaving."
There was a bird whistle as Polly neared the hiding place. She identified this one as the sound of a very bad bird impersonator, and made a note to teach the girls some bird calls that at least sounded real. They were harder to do than most people thought. The squad were in the gully, armed and at least looking dangerous. There was a certain amount of relaxation when they saw Jade carrying the two bound troopers. Two more were sitting disconsolately against the cliff, hands tied behind them. Maledict walked smartly up to Blouse and saluted.
"Two prisoners, LT, and Perks thinks there's someone down there you ought to talk to."
He leaned forward. "The newspaper man, sir."
"Then we'll jolly well keep well away from him, then," said Blouse. "Eh, Sergeant?"
"Right, sir," said Jackram. "Nothing but trouble, sir."
Polly saluted madly. "Please, sir, permission to speak, sir."
"Yes, Perks," said Blouse. Polly saw there was one chance and one only. She had to find out about Paul. Now her mind worked as fast as it had on the hill last night when she'd gone for the man with the code book.
"Sir, I don't know if he's worth talking to, sir, but he may be worth listening to, even if you think he'll only tell us lies, because sometimes, sir, the way people tell you lies, if they tell you enough lies, well, they sort of show you what shape the truth is, sir. And we don't have to tell him the truth, sir. We could lie to him, too."
"I'm not by nature an untruthful man, Perks," said Blouse coldly.
"Glad to hear it, sir. Are we winning the war, sir?"
"You stop that right now, Perks," Jackram roared.
"It was only a question, Sarge," said Polly reproachfully. Around the clearing, the squad waited, ears sucking up every sound. Everyone knew the answer. They waited for it to be said aloud.
"Perks, this kind of talk spreads despondency," Blouse began.
but he said it as if he didn't believe it and didn't care who knew. "No, sir, it doesn't really. It's better than being lied to," said Polly. She changed her voice, gave it that edge her mother used to use on her when she was being scolded. "It's evil to lie. No one likes a liar. Tell me the truth, please." Some harmonic of that must have had a home in an old part of Blouse's brain. As Jackram opened his mouth to roar, the lieutenant held up a hand. "We are not winning, Perks, but we have not lost yet." "I think we all know that, sir, but it's good to hear you say it," said Polly, giving him an encouraging smile. That seemed to work too. "I suppose there's no harm in at least being civil to the wretched fellow," said Blouse, as if thinking aloud. "He may give away valuable information under cunning questioning." Polly looked at Sergeant Jackram, who was staring upwards like a man in prayer. "Permission to be the man to interrogate the gentleman, sir," said the sergeant. "Permission denied, sergeant," said Blouse. "I'd like him to live, and I don't want to lose another lobe. However, you may take Perks back to the cart and drive it up here." Jackram gave him the smart salute. Polly had already learned to recognise it. It meant that Jackram had already made plans. "Very good, sir," he said. "Come on, Perks." Jackram was quiet as they walked back down over the needle-carpeted slope. Then, after a while, he said, "Do you know why them troopers found our little nook, Perks?"
"No, Sarge."
"The lieutenant ordered Shufti to put out the fire immediately. It wasn't as if there was even any smoke. So Shufti goes and pours the kettle on it." Polly gave this a few seconds' thought.
"Steam, Sarge."
"Right, in a bloody great rising cloud. Not Shufti's fault. The gallopers weren't any trouble, though. Bright enough not to try to outrun half a dozen crossbows, at least. That's clever for a cavalryman."
"Well done, Sarge."
"Don't talk to me as if I was a Rupert lad," said Jackram easily.
"Sorry, Sarge."
"I see you're learning how to steer an officer, though. You got to make sure they gives you the right orders, see? You'll make a good sergeant, Perks."
"Don't want to, Sarge."
"Yeah, right," said Jackram. It could have meant anything. After watching the track for a minute or two, they stepped out and headed toward the cart. De Word was sitting on a stool beside it, writing in a notebook, but he stood up hurriedly when he saw them. "It'll be a good idea to get off the track," he said, as soon as they approached. "There are a lot of patrols, I understand."
"Zlobinian patrols, sir," said Jackram.
"Yes. In theory, this," he pointed to the flag that hung limply from the cart, "should keep us safe. But everyone's a bit jumpy at the moment." "Aren't you Sergeant Jack Ram?"
"Jackram, sir, and I'll thank you for not writing my name down in your little book, sir."
"Sorry, Sergeant, but that's my job," said De Word breezily. "I have to write things down."
"Well, sir, soldiering's my job," said Jackram, climbing onto the cart and gathering up the reins. "But you'll note how at this moment in time I'm not killing you. Let's go, eh?"
Polly climbed into the back of the cart as it lumbered off. It was full of boxes and equipment, and while it may once have been neatly organised, that organisation was now but a distant memory, a clear indication that this cart was the property of a man. Next to her, half a dozen of the largest pigeons she'd ever seen dozed on a perch in their wire cage, and she wondered if they were a living larder. One of them opened one eye and lazily went, "Lululup," which is pigeon for
"duh."
Most of the rest of the boxes had labels like, she leaned closer, "Captain Horace Calumny's Patent Field Biscuits" and "Dried Stew." As she was musing that Shufti would have very much liked to get her hands on one or two of these boxes, a bundle of clothes hanging from the ceiling of the rocking cart moved slightly and a face appeared.
"Good morning,"
it said upside down. William De Word turned around on the seat in front.
"It's only Otto, Private," he said. "Don't be afraid." "Yes, I will not bite," said the face cheerfully.
It smiled. A vampire's face does not look any better upside down, and a smile in these circumstances does nothing to improve matters.
"That is guaranteed."
Polly lowered the crossbow. Jackram would have been impressed at how quickly she had raised it. So was she, and embarrassed too. The socks were doing the thinking again. Otto very elegantly lowered himself to the bed of the cart.
"Where are we going?"
he said, steadying himself as they bounced over a rut.
"A little place I know, sir," said Jackram. "Nice and quiet."
"Good. I need to exercise the imps," said the vampire. "They get fretful if they are cooped up for too long."
Otto pushed aside a stack of paper and revealed his large picture-making box. He lifted a small hatch. "Rise and shine, lads," he said. There was a chorus of high-pitched voices from inside.
"I'd better just give you the heads-up, re-Tiger, Mr. De Word," said Jackram as the cart rolled up an old logging track.
"Tiger? Who's Tiger?"
"Oops," said Jackram. "Sorry, that's what we call the lieutenant, sir, on account of him being so brave. Forget I said that, will you?"
"Brave, is he?" said De Word.
"And clever, sir. Don't let him fool you, sir. He is one of the great military minds of his generation, sir."
Polly's mouth dropped open. She'd suggested they liked the man, but this...
"Really? Then why is he just a lieutenant?" said the writer. "Ah, I can see there's no fooling you, sir," said Jackram, oozing knowingness. "Yes, it's a puzzler, sir, why he calls himself a lieutenant. Still, I dare say he has his reasons, eh? Just like Heinrich calling himself a captain, right?" He tapped the side of his nose. "I see everything, sir, and I don't say a word."
"All I could find out was that he did some kind of desk job at your HQ, Sergeant," said De Word. Polly saw him taking his notebook out slowly and carefully.
"Yes, I expect that what you would find out, sir," said Jackram with a huge conspiratorial wink. "And then, when things are at their worst, they let him out, sir. They unleash him, sir. Me, I don't know a thing, sir."
"What does he do? Explode?" said De Word.
"Nice one, sir," said Jackram. "No, sir, what he does, sir, is assess situation, sir. I don't understand it myself, sir, not being a big thinker. But the proof of the pudding, sir, is in the eating of same. And last night we were jumped by 8-20 Slovenian troopers, sir. And the lieutenant just assessed the situation in a flash and skewered 5 of the buggers, sir. Like a kebab, sir. Mild as milk to look at, but rouse him and he's a whirlwind of death. Of course you did not hear it from me, sir."
"And he's in charge of a bunch of recruits, Sergeant," said De Word. "That doesn't sound very likely to me."
"Recruits who captured some crack cavalrymen, sir," said Jackram, looking pained. "That's leadership for you. Comes the hour, comes the man, sir. I'm just a simple old soldier, sir. Seen 'em come, seen 'em go. Upon my oath, I am not a lying man, sir, but I look at Lieutenant Blows in wonderment."
"He just seemed confused to me," said De Word, but there was a hint of uncertainty in his voice.
"That was a bit of concussion, sir. He took a wallop that would have felled a lesser man, and still got back onto his feet. Amazing, sir."
"Hmm," said De Word, making a note. The cart splashed across the shallow little stream and rocked into the gully. Lieutenant Blows was sitting on a rock. He'd made an effort, but his tunic was grubby, his boots were muddy, his hand was swollen, and one ear, despite Igorina's attentions, was still inflamed. He had his sword on his knees. Jackram carefully brought the cart to a halt by a thicket of birch trees. All 4 of the enemy troopers were tied up against a cliff. Apart from them, the camp appeared to be deserted.
"Where are the rest of the men, Sergeant?" whispered De Word as he slid down off the cart.
"Oh, they're around, sir," said Jackram, "watching you. Probably not a good idea to make any sudden moves, sir."
No one else was visible, and then Maledict faded into view. People never really looked at things, Polly knew. They glanced, and what had been a patch of scrub was now Corporal Maledict. Polly stared. He'd cut a hole in the centre of his old blanket, and the mud and grass stains on the mildewed greyness had turned him into part of the landscape until he saluted. He'd also stuck leafy twigs all over his hat. Sergeant Jackram goggled. Polly had never really seen proper goggling before, but the sergeant had the face to do it at a championship level. She could feel him drawing breath while at the same time assembling cuss words for a right royal thundering. And then he remembered he was playing Sergeant Big Jolly Fat Man, and this was not the time to segue into Sergeant Incandescent.
"Lads, eh?" he chuckled to De Word. "What will they think of next?"
De Word nodded nervously, pulled a wad of newspapers from under his seat, and advanced on the lieutenant.
"Mr. De Word, isn't it?" said Blau, standing up. "Perks, can we manage a cup of, saloop for Mr. De Word? There's a good chap. Do take a rock, sir."
"Good of you to see me, Lieutenant," said De Word. "It looks as though you've been in the wars," he added, with an attempt at joviality.
"No, only this one," said Blouse, looking puzzled.
"I meant that you have been wounded, sir," said De Word.
"These? Oh, they're nothing, sir. I'm afraid the one on my hand was self-inflicted. Sword drill, you know."
"Your
Left-handed, then, sir?
Oh, no.
Polly, washing out a mug, heard Jackram say out of the corner of his mouth, "Should have seen the other two fellows, sir."
"Are you aware of the progress of the war, Lieutenant?" said De Word.
"You tell me, sir," said Blouse.
"All your army is bottled up in the Kinnec Valley, dug in, mostly, just beyond the reach of the Keep's weaponry. Your forts elsewhere along the border have been captured. The garrisons at Drup and Glitz and Arblat have been overwhelmed. As far as I can tell, Lieutenant, your squad are the only soldiers still at large. At least," he added, "the only ones still fighting."
"And my regiment?" said Blouse quietly.
"The remnant of the 10th took part in a brave but frankly suicidal attempt to retake Kinnec Keep a few days ago, sir. Most of the survivors are prisoners of war, and I have to tell you that almost all your high command have been captured. They were in the keep when it was taken. There are big dungeons in that fort, sir, and they're pretty full."
"Why should I believe you?"
"I do," thought Polly. "So Paul is either dead, wounded, or captured. And it doesn't help much to think of it as two chances in three that he is alive." De Word threw his newspapers at the lieutenant's feet.
"It's all there, sir. I didn't make it up. It's the truth. It will remain true whether you believe it or not. There are more than six countries ranged against you, including Genua and Moldavia and Ankh-Morpork. There is no one on your side. You are alone. The only reason you're not beaten yet is because you won't admit it. I've seen your generals, sir, great leaders, and your men fight like demons, but they won't surrender."
"Borogravia doesn't know the meaning of the word surrender, Mr. De Word," said the lieutenant.
"May I loan you a dictionary, sir?" snapped De Word, going red in the face. "It's very similar to the meaning of the word making some kind of peace while you've still got a chance, sir. It's rather like the word quitting while you've still got a head, sir. Good heavens, sir, don't you understand? The reason that there still is an army in Kinnec Valley is that the Allies haven't yet decided what to do with it. They're fed up with the slaughter."
"Ah, so we still fight back," said Blouse.
De Word sighed. "You don't understand, sir. They are fed up with slaughtering you. They've got the keep now. There's some big war engines up there. They... frankly, sir, some of the Alliance would just as soon wipe out the remains of your army. It'd be like shooting rats in a barrel. They have you at their mercy, and yet you keep on attacking. You attack the keep. It's on sheer rock, and it's got walls 100 feet high. You make salients across the river. You're bottled up, and you've got nowhere to go, and the Allies could simply massacre you any time they want, and you act as if you're just facing some kind of temporary setback. That's what's really happening, Lieutenant. You are just a last little detail."
"Have a care, please," Blouse warned.
"Excuse me, sir, but do you know anything about recent history? In the past 30 years, you have declared war on every single one of your neighbours at least once. All countries fight, but you brawl. And then last year you invaded Slovenia again."
"They invaded us, Mr. De Word."
"You have been misinformed, Lieutenant. You invaded the Kinnec province."
"That was confirmed as Borogravian by the Treaty of Lint more than 100 years ago.
"Signed at sword point, sir. And no one cares now, in any case. It's all got beyond your stupid little royal scuffles. Because your men tore down the Grand Trunk, you see, the Clax Towers, and tore up the coach road. Ankh-Morpork regards that as bandit activity."
"Have a care, I said," said Blouse. "I note you are displaying the Ankh-Morpork flag with evident pride on your wagon."
"Civis Morporcias sum, sir. I am an Ankh-Morpork citizen. You could say that Ankh-Morpork shelters me under her wide and rather greasy wing, although I agree the metaphor could use some work."
"Your Ankh-Morpork soldiers aren't in a position to protect you, however."
"Sir, you are right. You could have me killed right now," said De Word simply. "You know that. I know that. But you won't, for three reasons. The officers of Borogravia tend towards honour. Everyone says that. That's why they don't surrender. And I bleed most distressingly. And you don't need to, because everyone's interested in you. Suddenly it's all changed."
"Interested in us?"
Sir, in a sense, you could help a lot right now. Apparently, people back in Ankh-Morpork were amazed when... Look, have you heard about what we call human interest, sir?
No.
De Word tried to explain. Blouse listened with his mouth open and at the end said,
Have I got this right? Although many people have been killed and wounded in this wretched war, it's not been of much interest to your readers. But it is now just because of us. Because of a little skirmish in a town they never heard of. And because of that, we're suddenly a plucky little country, and people are telling your newspaper that your great city should be on our side.
Yes, Lieutenant. We put out a second edition last night, you see, after I'd found out that Captain Horrentz was really Prince Heinrich. Did you know this at the time, sir?
Of course not, snapped Blouse.
And you, Private, Perks, would you have kicked him in the, would you have kicked him had you known? Polly dropped a mug in her nervousness and looked at Blouse.
You may answer, of course, Perks, said the Lieutenant.
Well, yes, sir, I would have kicked him. Harder, probably. I was defending myself, sir, Polly said, carefully avoiding further details. You couldn't be sure what someone like De Word would do with them.
Right, good, yes, said De Word. Then you might be pleased with this. Our cartoonist, Fizz, drew this for the special edition. It was on the front page. We've sold a record number of copies. He handed her a flimsy piece of paper, which by the look of the creases had been folded many times. It was a line drawing with lots of shading. It showed a huge figure with a large sword, a monstrous monocle, and a moustache as wide as a coat hanger, menacing a much smaller figure armed with nothing more than an instrument for lifting beats. In fact, there was a beat stuck on the end of it. At least, that was clearly what had been happening, right up to the point when the smaller figure, wearing a not-a-bad-attempt at an ins-and-outs shako and a face that slightly looked like Polly's, had kicked the other one squarely in the groinal regions. A sort of balloon was coming out of Polly's mouth, containing the words, "That's for your royal prerogative, you blackguard." The balloon issuing from the mouth of the ogre, who could only be Prince Heinrich, said, "Oh, my succession, that such a small thing could hurt so much." And in the background, a fat woman in a rumpled ball gown and a huge old-fashioned helmet was clasping her hands to an unbelievably large bosom, staring at the fight with a mixture of concern and admiration, and ballooning, "Oh, my swain, I fear our liaison is cut short." Since no one else was saying much, but was simply staring, De Word said rather nervously, "Fizz is rather, direct in these matters, but amazingly popular."
You see, the curious thing is that although Ankh-Morpork is probably the biggest bully around, in a subtle kind of way, we nevertheless have a soft spot for people who stand up to bullies, especially royal ones. We tend to be on their side, provided it doesn't cost us too much.
Blouse cleared his throat.
"It's quite a good likeness of you, Perks," he said hoarsely.
"I only use my knee, sir," Polly protested, "and that fat lady certainly wasn't there."
"That's more pork here," said De Word. "She's a sort of representation of the city, except that, in her case, she's not covered in mud and soot."
"And I have to add for my part," said Blouse in his talking-to-a-meeting voice, "that Borogravia is in fact larger than Slovenia, although most of the country is little more than barren mountainside."
"That doesn't actually matter," said De Word.
"It doesn't?" said Blouse.
"No, sir. It's just a fact. It's not politics. In politics, sir, pictures like this are powerful."
"Sir, even the Alliance commanders are talking about you, and the Slovenians are angry and bewildered. If you, the heroes of the hour, could make a plea for a little common sense..."
The Lieutenant took a long, deep breath.
"This is a foolish war, Mr. De Word, but I am a soldier. I have kissed the Duchess, as we say. It's an oath of loyalty. Don't tempt me to break it. I must fight for my country. We will repel all invaders. If there are deserters, we will find them and rally them again. We know the country. While we are free, Borogravia will be free. You have had your say. Thank you. Where is that tea, Perks?"
"What? Oh, nearly done, sir," said Polly, turning back to the fire.